say. Commissioner Jamdar?
Here.
Commissioner Leveroni?
Here.
Commissioner Thurlow?
Here.
You have a quorum.
Thank you. Before calling the first item, I'd like to announce that the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission acknowledges that it owns and are stewards of the unceded lands located within the ethno-historic territory of the Mwekma Ohlone tribe and other familial descendants of the historic, federally recognized Mission San Jose Verona Band of Alameda County. The SFPUC also recognizes that every citizen residing within the Greater Bay Area has and continues to benefit from the use and occupation of the Mwekma Ohlone tribe's aboriginal lands since before and after the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission's founding in 1932. It is vitally important that we not only recognize the history of the tribal lands on which we reside, but also we acknowledge and honor the fact that the Mwekma Ohlone people have established a working partnership with the SFPUC and are productive and flourishing members within the many greater San Francisco Bay Area communities today. Thank you. Call the first item, please.
Item 3, approval of the minutes of May 27, 2025.
Commissioners, any comments or questions on the minutes? No. Should we call public comment?
Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item 3. Are there any members of the public present who wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, moderator, are there any callers who have their hand raised?
Ms. Lanier, there are no callers that wish to be recognized.
Thank you.
Thank you. Could I have a motion and a second on the minutes, please?
Motion to approve.
Seconded.
Thank you.
President Stacy?
Aye.
Vice President Arce?
Aye.
Commissioner Jamdar?
Aye.
Commissioner Leveroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Thurlow?
Aye.
The item passes.
Thank you.
Item 4, general public comment. Members of the public may address the Commission on matters that are within the Commission's jurisdiction and are not on today's agenda.
The Commission values civic engagement and encourages respectful communication at the public meeting. We ask that all public comment be made in a civil and courteous manner and that you refrain from the use of profanity. Thank you.
Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item 4. Are there any members of the public present who wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, moderator, are there any callers who have their hand raised?
Ms. Lanier, there's one caller that wished to be recognized.
Thank you.
Caller, I've unmuted your line. You have 2 minutes.
Eileen Boken, Coalition for San Francisco Neighborhoods, speaking on my own behalf. In the aftermath of the 1906 earthquake, 80% of the city was destroyed by fire. In the future, in order to protect lives, property, and insurability, the city built an independent system for emergency firefighting, which was separate from the drinking water system. Operationally, the system, known as AWAS, was under the fire department with design and engineering by DPW. From 1913 to 2010, the AWAS system operated under this model until then Mayor Gavin Newsom transferred the AWAS system to the PUC. This was done solely to balance the city's budget. On January 22, 2019, on the PUC agenda was item 5I with the innocuous title, Water Pipeline Assessment, January 1, 2018 to June 30, 2018. The written report states that it was presented at the commission meeting. It was not. Even though this was a discussion item, there was no discussion. Buried in the report was a statement, and I quote, the single pipeline meets level of service goals and objectives for the potable system as well as AWAS, thus avoiding the capital and maintenance cost of two separate pipelines, end quote. This was the beginning of the bastardization of AWAS. It's unclear if a mid-level manager made this decision or how decision-making operated under former GM Harlan Kelly, who is now in federal prison. Thank you.
Thank you, caller, for your comments. Ms. Lanier, there are no more callers that wish to be recognized.
Thank you.
Thank you. Please call the next item.
Item 5, report of the general manager.
Thank you, Ms. Lanier. Item 5A is a quarterly audit and performance review report. Nancy Holm will be presenting.
Vice President Arce and Commissioners, my name is Nancy Holm, Chief Financial Officer and AGM for Business Services. I'm here on behalf of Irella Blackwood, Audit Director, to present the Audit Bureau's quarterly audit and performance review report for the third quarter ending March 31st of fiscal year 24-25. May I have the slides, please? As of March 31st, the PUC has completed a total of 19 audits. This includes 14 financial audits and 5 performance audits. There are currently 9 audits in progress, highlighted here in these pie charts, the center being those in progress. We have a total of 11 audits scheduled to begin in the current and fourth quarter this year. The majority of these last 11 audits that are currently about to begin or in current stages right now are related to fiscal year-end activities. In Q3, 2 audits were completed, and they're listed here on this table for you. They were a public integrity assessment performed by the city's city services auditor, focusing on the status of contracts with Rudolph Dwayne Jones, issued on March 11th, and a performance audit of the citywide management of conflicts of interest, issued March 24th by the Board of Supervisors, Budget and Legislative Analysts. Both audits here were performed and assessed for citywide practices. They are only included in our report out here today because the PUC participated or responded to the auditor's field work. Each quarter, the Audit Bureau highlights a noteworthy completed audit, and as we only have 2, we will quickly spotlight the CSA's public integrity assessment of city contracts with the now suspended vendor, Rudolph Dwayne Jones. In March 2025, the CSA issued its 13th report in a series of public integrity assessments that summarized and reported upon public corruption, allegations, and subsequent events. In August 2023, the district attorney criminally charged Rudolph Dwayne Jones, known as RDJ, with bribing a former employee of the Office of the City Administrator to secure city contracts and grants through the Community Challenge Grant Program over a 4-year period from 2016 to 2020. Multiple city departments were affected by the alleged criminal conduct. Findings and recommendations were made and directed towards the Human Rights Commission, the Office of Economic Workforce Development, the Office of Contracts Administration within the City Administrator's Office, and the Controller's Office Systems Division. The internal control deficiencies identified by the audit included a lack of compliance to policies related to conflicts of interest and incompatible activities, lack of program oversight and fiscal program monitoring, and the inadequate use of the city's financial and procurement system to monitor subgrant awards and payments. No findings and recommendations were attributed to the SFPUC, and in September 2023, along with all citywide departments, the PUC immediately directed the termination of all work with RDJ as a subcontractor and his associated companies. The PUC continues to be proactive in supporting fraud awareness and prevention and continues to work closely with the Controller's City Services Auditor and all external oversight bodies as part of regular daily activities. This table highlights our audit recommendations by both the CSA and the Budget and Legislative Analysts. The Audit Bureau actively monitors all open audit recommendations agency-wide and ensures that they're implemented as agreed by management. As of March 31st, there are 16 open audit recommendations across 4 audits open this year. Staff continue to work on implementing and closing these recommendations. Recommendations stay open on this list until the CSA or the Budget and Legislative Analysts formally notify us that they have been closed, and this usually happens after a follow-up audit or communication from their office. Our policy is to close all audit recommendations within 6 months' time. Looking forward to the current and Q4 quarter, We anticipate the following audits here will be completed. They include another budget and legislative analyst audit of the citywide management of interdepartmental services, known as work orders, the now sunset Revenue Bond Oversight Committee's Phase 3 audit, the Controller's Office single audit for 2024, and then also for fiscal year 2023-24, the wholesale revenue requirement and statement of changes in the balancing account. What we have upcoming in the, again, the starting in the fourth quarter, so those are complete, these are starting, Clean Power SF Program's independent privacy audit, as well as a number of fiscal year-end audits listed here from the Controller's Office for post-audit, our annual warehouse inventory counts, as well as the beginning of the interim financial statement preparations, and then finally, a cost reconciliation audit with the Treasure Island Developmental Authority. This concludes my presentations. I'm glad to answer any questions.
Thank you. Commissioners, questions or comments? Commissioner Leveroni.
Just to center in on one area, just so I could have an idea. On the number two, the bond oversight audit, phase two, the recommendation has been completed. And it said it should strengthen compliance and monitoring controls. So is that something that then has already been done, or is that going to be part of phase three in the bond audit?
Are you referring to revenue bond? This is on slide six?
Yes. Yes, number two, item number two.
I see that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. So that audit was phase two of the from the RBOC and focused on. I'm trying to remember that particular audit that focused on management reporting as well as the supporting documents. And for that one, those recommendations have been closed. So that second audit was in a series of three.
Okay.
So currently we are in phase three, and we're awaiting the controller's office to close out that particular audit, and hopefully that will be issued in the next month's time.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other commissioners' comments or questions? Thank you for the presentation. It's really valuable, your attention to detail and responsiveness on these audits, and that the department takes them seriously. Thank you for your support. Public comment?
Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item 5A. Are there any members of the public present who wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, moderator, are there any callers who have their hand raised?
Ms. Lanier, there are no callers that wish to be recognized.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lanier. Items 5B and C will be presented together by Katie Miller. Item 5B. Is a Water Enterprise Capital Improvement Program quarterly report, and item C is a Water System Improvement Program quarterly report.
Good afternoon, President Stacey and commissioners, and welcome Commissioner Thurlow. I'm Katie Miller, Director of Water Capital Programs. Today I will provide a combined presentation on items 5B and C with an update on the Water Enterprise Capital Improvement Program, as well as the Water System Improvement Program, as of the end of the third quarter of this fiscal year, 24-25. I will start with the Water Enterprise Capital Improvement Program. And may I have the slides, please? Thank you. The regional and local water enterprise capital improvement programs include a total of 52 projects with a combined budget of $4.0 billion. This third quarter report includes project budgets and schedules that were adopted by the Commission in February 2024, as well as one project budget increase of $74 million for the Sonoma Valley Water Treatment Plant Ozone Project that was adopted this past February 2025 as part of the mid-cycle budget update. These pie charts show that during the past two quarters, 4 new projects were initiated, with 7 projects not yet initiated, for a total of 23 projects in planning and design phases and 22 projects in bid and award, construction, and closeout phases. About 34% of the program budget has been spent to date, with $90 million spent in the past two quarters. This table, similar to Table 3 in the quarterly reports, shows a summary of program expenditures and cost forecasts at the end of March for all active projects by category. The right two columns show cost variances between the budgeted and forecast costs. This table shows that at the end of the third quarter, project budgets are mostly on track with the approved budgets, with only $7 million in cost increases forecast at this time. During the quarter, one regional project, Sunset Reservoir Perimeter Fencing Replacement, forecasted a cost increase of about $4 million, and one local project, College Hill Reservoir, forecasted a cost increase of less than $1 million. And now I will share highlights of the regional projects that are in construction. This list shows the 8 regional projects in construction as of the end of March and relative percent completion. Note that the Sunol Valley Water Treatment Plant Ozone Project and the San Antonio Pump Station Motor Control Center Project are just beginning construction, whereas the Harry Tracy Water Treatment Plant Filter Upgrades, Corrosion Control, San Andreas No. 1 Service Road, and Sunol Long-Term Improvements Watershed Center are all nearing final completion. And now I'm happy to share just a few project highlights with you. The Sunol Valley Water Treatment Plant Ozone Project has spent $35 million of its $326 million budget, with significant early site preparation and construction of utilities in the past 6 months. This photo shows the large excavated vault and shoring in preparation for a concrete pour for the future open loop cooling water pump station. The contractor has identified several unforeseen utility conflicts that are being addressed at this crowded site adjacent to the water treatment plant. The construction teams are partnering effectively to assure critical piping connections can be completed this fall prior to the 100-day Hetch Hetchy water system shutdown, when the Sunol Valley Water Treatment Plant will be needed to operate reliably at full capacity. The Southern Skyline Boulevard Ridge Trail Extension Project made significant progress in construction, with approximately 75% of the finished trail surface now in place. Remaining work includes construction of the Universal Access Loop Trail north of Route 92, security fencing, and various other items. The local capital program has 7 projects in construction, listed on this slide with their relative percent completion. Note that 2 construction contracts for Town of Sunol Pipeline and San Francisco Water Division headquarters are in early construction, and 3 contracts for Westside Enhanced Water Recycling Facility, College Hill Reservoir, and Emergency Firefighting Water System Clarendon Supply are nearing final completion. The main replacement program currently has 10 construction contracts underway throughout San Francisco. And you will be hearing more about the San Francisco Water Division headquarters construction contract under item 8 presented later today. And now I'll share highlights from one of the local projects, the Emergency Firefighting Water System. This programmatic project with multiple sub-projects has a budget of $154 million with funding from the 2020 Earthquake Safety and Emergency Response General Fund bonds. Of this funding, $36 million has been spent to date. The Clarendon Supply sub-project is approaching construction completion and closeout, and 3 fireboat manifold improvement projects continued in the planning phase. The majority of this project's budget will be for construction of the potable emergency firefighting water system, including new seismically reliable firefighting water pipelines in the western part of San Francisco. These pipelines will also be used to serve drinking water day to day, and thus the Water Enterprise Capital Improvement Program is also funding a portion of the cost. This photo shows one section of this new pipeline system being installed along 19th Avenue last year. The remaining sections are in design, with the first contract from Lake Merced to Slope Boulevard approaching 95% design, and the second contract along 42nd Avenue to approximately Lawton Street is near 35% design. However, during the past quarter, discussions with the San Francisco Fire Department revealed that a more optimal alignment for this pipeline to use as a fire break may be along Sunset Boulevard or an adjacent avenue. This potential change in alignment is being evaluated. I will now provide a concise summary of the Regional Water System Improvement Program as of the end of March. The regional program, consisting of 52 projects for a total budget of $3.8 billion, is 99% complete, with only $62 million of budget unspent. There are only four projects remaining, with one active project in planning and one in construction. This table shows a summary of the budgets, expenditures, and cost variances for the two remaining active projects. There are no project cost variances to report at this time. The Regional Groundwater Storage and Recovery Project is 91% complete at this time. For the two remaining construction contracts, the Phase 2A contract to rehabilitate wells and add variable speed drives is almost complete, with startup testing performed during the quarter. The Phase 2B contract to complete installation of the South Sunset main well and pipeline connection to Cal Waters facility started construction. The contractor is obtaining permits and preparing submittals. For the Alameda Creek Recapture Project, planning for a redesigned facility is underway. During the quarter, the consultant team evaluated several types of pump station configurations to meet the design criteria, considering operability, ease of maintenance, water supply objectives, constructability, and cost. And with that, I'll be happy to take any questions.
Thank you for the presentation, Ms. Miller, and the quarterly reports. Always interesting to read. Commissioners, comments or questions? I did have a couple of questions just about specific projects. In the WESIP, there are two Bay Division Pipeline 4 projects that seem related. One is the PCCP project, and the other one is BDPL 1 through 4. And it sounded as though the PCCP project, you are still thinking about just going straight to replacement of some lining rather than repair. I assume that's because the damage is great enough that it makes more sense to go straight to replacement rather than repair first?
Yes, the BD pipeline for PCCP, which is pre-stressed concrete cylinder pipe, that is for the last stretch D of the Bay Division 4 pipeline. And it goes through very steep terrain and along creek beds, and so it's environmentally sensitive as well as a seismically or ground deformation sensitive.
A little tricky.
So we've looked at slip lining, we've looked at repairing on the inside, and then we've looked at replacing sections of the pipe. And at this time, the team is taking a step back and saying maybe a full replacement is necessary. That's a much higher cost project. So we're taking a pause to kind of truly consider what the best solution for that section of pipe is. The other project, which is the BD pipeline, Bay Division Pipeline 1 through 4 lining repair, is specifically focused on lining repair on the insides of the pipe. The lining is the interior and the coating is the exterior when they're talking about pipes. That has been combined with the as-needed pipeline repair project, and so they'll use that as an opportunity to do inspections and get ahead of the maintenance requirements for those pipelines. The big cost increase that's happened gradually over time on those projects is for installing valves, similar to the San Joaquin pipeline program where they put double valves in everywhere for safe entry of personnel. So personnel can go in and have two methods to keep them safe from the water and the pressure. So that is what is really making that project take a little bit longer to get out. But it will be a very, very valuable project when it's out. And I believe that one is going to advertise late summer or early fall.
Great, thank you. One other question I had was on the West Side Recycled Water Project, it seemed like there were some ongoing delays for that project. Is it still a ventilation issue that is being addressed?
Yes. For that one, at the main facility, there was corrosion within some of the, especially the variable speed drives for the pumps. Mm-hmm. And so our staff is working very hard to come up with solutions for that. And we will most likely be moving on from the existing contractor and doing that under smaller contracts to bring back the vendors from the original contract and start up the facility. We have yet to really forecast the true cost and schedule impact on that one because we're still kind of figuring out how we're going to get it all done. But we've been meeting regularly on it and meeting with the contractor and working hard to get the original contract closed out so we can move on and do the repairs.
Got it. Thank you. Let's take public comment.
Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item 5B or 5C. Are there any members of the public present who wish to comment on these items? Seeing none, moderator, are there any callers who have their hand raised?
Ms. Lanier, there are no callers that wish to be recognized.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Miller.
Madam President, that completes my report.
Thank you. Call the next item, please.
Item 6 is the consent calendar, items 6A through 6C.
Commissioners, any comments or questions on the consent calendar items? No. Let's take public comment.
Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item 6C, the consent calendar. Are there any members of the public present who wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, moderator.
Ms. Lanier, there are no callers in the queue.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Commissioners, could I have a motion and a second to approve the consent calendar?
I move that we approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Thank you.
President Stacy?
Aye.
Vice President Arce?
Aye.
Commissioner Jamdar?
Aye.
Commissioner Leveroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Thurlow?
Aye.
Item 6 passes. Item 7. Adopt the 2025 Wildfire Mitigation Plan and authorize the SFPUC General Manager to file the plan with the California Office of Energy Infrastructure Safety Wildfire Safety Advisory Board on or before July 1st, 2025.
Good afternoon. My name is Ethan Billigmeyer. I'm a utility specialist with Hetch Hetchy Water and Power, and today I'll be presenting on our 2025 SFPUC Wildfire Mitigation Plan update. It's due on or before July 1st to the Wildfire Safety Advisory Board. May I have the slides, please? Oh, perfect. So the 2025 Wildfire Mitigation Plan is an update to our 2024 plan. It updates on our projects and initiatives that we had put in on our 2023 comprehensive revision. So that is the base plan, and then every 2 years we do updates to that plan, and every third year we do another comprehensive revision with an independent evaluation. So while the water enterprise is responsible for the development, execution, and oversight of the WMP, it covers assets that are critical to the power enterprise as well. And our core of our 2025 WMP remains the same, minimizing the source of ignition, grid resiliency, and then striving towards continual improvement. So this map shows the SFPUC transmission and distribution lines as they intersect into the California Public Utilities or through the California Public Utilities high fire threat districts. Parts that are in red are a tier three high fire threat district, and the areas that are in sort of beige there are considered a tier two. So we do have some of our transmission, 230 kV, that runs through some tier three, and then down in the peninsula area, we have some distribution that runs in the tier three. We have approximately about 84.6 or 26% of our transmission is in tier two. 6.5 miles or 2% is in tier three. And then on distribution, we have 39.8 miles or 87% in tier two and 39.9 or 8% in tier three. So there is definitely, we have high fire threat districts that our utilities run through. So I would like to go over some key accomplishments that we had in our 2024 plan. One of the major accomplishments was we continued to refine and formalize our daily wildfire weather situational awareness application, which we have a contract through TechnoSova, who have custom built this application for us. What we have now is we have an automated email alert that goes out every morning to all of our crew leaders and supervisors that tells them what the forecast is for that day and then the next 3 days in terms of fire weather conditions. And what that does is it helps them plan their work in the field to make sure that they're following their best management practices, making sure that they, if there is an increased fire potential for that day, that they're bringing the appropriate tools with them, water, things like that. And then the forecast helps us plan work out in advance for contractors or things like that. We also do use this information when we need to make a determination on whether or not we need to de-energize our lines for safety. We don't have a formal PSPS program, but we have a de-energization program. Following along with the fire potential index, we also were able to integrate live feeds of all the wildfire cameras into the application. So we have access to pretty much every live feed in California. And what you can't see here on the slide is that if you click one of those, it actually brings up the live feed, and you can see what that camera is actually doing. Unfortunately, you can't move the camera around, but you can see what that camera is looking at, which is incredibly valuable. About 80% of our system is covered by a camera. They have about a 60-mile view shed in a clear on a clear day, and we're looking at putting in a few more. Another key accomplishment was we have started utilizing LiveEO, which is a satellite data vegetation management program where it actually uses satellites that are constantly floating around, and it actually pulls imagery from those, and then they run algorithms to basically determine how far away our vegetation is from our overhead lines. So our veg management team uses that information to plan where we need to do big projects to clear our right-of-ways or areas where trees may be growing faster than we anticipated. It comes in handy a lot in the Central Valley where we have a lot of our lines that run through orchard lands. And then the bottom picture is just a picture of a right-of-way that we had a contractor perform that's adjacent to our 22 kV line and also our home powerhouse penstock, and that project was developed using the data that we acquired from the LiveEO satellite vegetation. We realized that there was quite a bit of encroachment going on there, and we wanted to get that cleared out. We also decided to do pole wrapping on some of our distribution poles that feed our critical water assets. So we had poles wrapped, 117 poles were wrapped using a Hexion armor, which actually, once it gets hot, it kind of forms around the power pole and creates a barrier. And it also is a lot easier to climb for our linemen than composite poles. And this slide is a slide that's, I pulled this straight out of our wildfire mitigation plan. So this is our outcome and performance metrics. This shows all the performance metrics that we track. One particular one that's important is our wires down inside the HFTD. So that's how many times did a wire come down, regardless of, you know, if was it a branch or something that came through that. So as you can see, if you look, it's kind of hard to see, but you know, we have two of them, but fortunately they came down. We had zero in 2024, but we've had some that came down, but due to winter storms, heavy snow load in the upcountry area. And this slide highlights some of the projects that we have that are going to be moving forward with. One of them is replacing our high-risk 4292 non-exempt equipment replacement. 4292 is a public resources code that's put out by CAL FIRE, essentially stating if you have equipment that is non-exempt in their fire prevention field guide, you have to clear a 10-foot radial down to bare mineral soil around that pole, because that kind of equipment can cause sparks if something happens, it faults. We're going to be replacing some of that equipment with exempt equipment, which does not require us to do that 10-foot radial clearance around those poles. So I think the first project we have is going to be around the Camp Mather area. And this slide talks about all the programs that we have in our wildfire mitigation plan. It has our, we do annual patrols of our vegetation. We do them both on the ground, and then we also do them via helicopter. It also talks about some of the programs and initiatives that are unique to the SFPUC. One of those is our a live EO using the satellite imagery. That's a kind of an emerging technology, and we're kind of pushing forward on that as a front runner. The other one is using ArcGIS field maps to track all of our vegetation using latitude and longitude, and then that can be put into a dashboard, and we can really track the amount of vegetation that we're removing, what types it is, you know, how fast those trees are growing, how fast we have to go back in and revisit those areas. And then all of our asset inspections, we do those annually as well, patrol for to make sure that our poles are safe that we're correcting any deficiencies that we find. We also have a QAQC process to make sure that the work's being verified, that it's being done. If a work order gets closed out that says, hey, yeah, I went out and trimmed that tree, we're actually having somebody come and do an audit on that to make sure that that did in fact happen. And then this is a screenshot of that dashboard. This is what the outcome looks like. The map up top shows where all those points were dropped by the inspector. And then the data below shows what type of inspection was it, what type of remediation is needed, is it immediate, is it, you know, can it wait, and then what kind of, does it need to be trimmed or removed, and then the species are all on the right-hand side, so we can track how many different species we're removing. And that concludes my presentation. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Commissioners, comments or questions? Commissioner Thurlow?
I have a question about the timeline of the inspections every year. Mm-hmm. And I noticed that in 2024, the inspections were a little bit later in the season. And I'm wondering how you think about the sensitivity of concluding inspections with respect to fire season and potentially changes in fire season, and then how does that relate to the ability to access the satellite data now?
So we've been working on with the goal of trying to get all of our inspections done prior to fire season, and we've been trying to think creatively about how to get that done, because one of the issues that we run up against is that in the upcountry area, some of that is still under snow. So it makes it extremely difficult for our inspectors to go out there when they have to post hole through, you know, 6 feet of snow to try to get to some of these areas. So one of the we've have started using some drone work to do that. We think we might be able to increase that and use that as a method going forward to get to some of those areas a little bit earlier to do those inspections via drone. That's a good question about the satellite data. I'm not sure how much that really affects the satellite data as much, but it does inspect, our, depending on how late the snow stays in the upcountry area, it does affect how fast we can get those inspections done in those areas. But we do try to get those done first because obviously that is a very risky area. I'm sorry, did I answer your question?
Yeah, I guess that my question, you answered the bulk of it, but okay. My question is basically, does the satellite data reduce the need to, does it sort of replace the inspection in any capacity whatsoever?
No, it doesn't. It just is another way for us to collect data that's going on. Really, we use it for just another set of eyes to tell us if the inspector may have missed something while he was out in the field. It's another way to look at, it's another spatially way to look at the data and see, okay, we're seeing, did this tree get marked? It's showing up in the satellite data. Did the inspector catch it? If not, then we need to go back out there and take a look at it.
Can you use it to prioritize where you send inspectors first?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. So if we see areas, it's color coded. There's a hierarchy of how close that vegetation is to encroaching the line. If we see that as, an immediate threat, then yes, we would send the inspectors out there immediately to mark that tree and get it removed. Yeah.
Sure. Go ahead.
And then one additional question related to sort of how this is basically managed by the water enterprise, despite the fact that there are also, it's power lines functionally that are the high risk part of this. How is this accounted for in terms of the expense associated with the management of the wildfire mitigation, and then also what happens if there's a wildfire event and there's liability associated with it? How does that get managed?
Yeah, Steve Ritchie, Assistant General Manager for Power, or for Water. Sometimes it's power, too. I was thinking power all the way. This whole program is managed in part because of the way the system has been developed over time. We have, for the what we call the upcountry portion of the system, which is basically everything from the Sierra all the way down through across the San Joaquin Valley and through the Coast Range Tunnel. That is the Hetch Hetchy Water and Power Project. So all of the assets that are used to deliver water also touch on and relate to and must be operated in conjunction with all of the assets that are used for power transmission and generation as well. So it's an integrated system from that point of view. So in terms of our organizational structure, Hetch Hetchy Water and Power Division is actually within the water enterprise, and so that's where this is all managed is there. When you get down to the Bay Area, the power lines are all in our watershed areas, and so those are all water-related assets because of the operational needs there. So that's kind of how it's all divided up that way. And in those watershed areas, it's a little bit different management because the power assets are important in terms of risk, but our watershed areas have lots of risks with them. Lightning strikes actually are the most, the biggest one. So how we manage fuel loads overall is really a bigger issue in the watershed areas in the Bay Area. So it's a package deal for us.
Thanks. Commissioner Leveroni.
On the TechnoSilva system,
mm-hmm.
We're putting in more cameras are going in, I'm thinking.
We plan on installing three additional cameras in some areas in the upcountry where we do not have a good view shed of our distribution system, and that area is particularly tricky just due to the canyonous terrain of the area. We have to find a good place to put it. We have to find a number one a place that can support the additional equipment, so we may have to put in a new pole or something, or we can hook it to an existing structure, and then we have to make sure that it's going to be able to actually give us a usable view shed, because Cal Fire really relies on those cameras.
That's where my next question was. So it's monitored only by Cal Fire, or is it also monitored by any of the SFPUC staff also?
We do monitor it, but Cal Fire is the main monitor of that in terms of fire response. Usually we're notified of a fire through that by Cal Fire, and then we can start looking at that camera and figure out, you know, how close is that to any of our assets.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And is TechnoSilver, is that a Cal Fire system, or is it our?
So TechnoSilver is they're a private company. They are contracted by Cal Fire. All of the major investor-owned utilities, PG&E, San Diego Gas and Electric, Cal Fire, they all use TechnoSilver as their risk modeling software. We looked at a few other options, but TechnoSilver was willing to build a customized application specifically for the SFPUC that really met our needs. And what we really wanted was something that was user-friendly and was going to be easy for us to interpret what's safe, what isn't, so that we can continue to do our work and make good evaluations and good decisions.
Okay. And is TechnoSilver only a viewing system, or is it also a notification system?
So it is mostly a viewing system. What you're seeing, what was in the presentation, is just a screenshot of the automated messaging that comes out every day to the crews. The application is actually quite vast in what you can do with it. It gets updated every 3 hours. There's a timeline on the bottom. You can actually have that play, and it will show in real time the changing weather conditions in the field within a 30-mile radius of the entire SFPUC overhead electrical system. So you can see how the vegetation is changing that day, the live and dead fuel moisture levels, the wind speed, the relative humidity. It also takes into consideration topography. So if there's a lot of canyons or things like that, it takes into the fact that wildfires burning up canyons typically run up the hills faster. They have, I think, about 30 years of wildfire data that they use to create their algorithms. They're a very well-respected and used product. So we've been really happy with them.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Commissioner Jamdar.
Thank you, President Stacey. So in the past, has any of our infrastructure at the PUC been impacted by wildfires, and has this plan evolved over time to accommodate for any of that? Because we are in several Tier 3 zones and hear so much about PG&E infrastructure constantly being in trouble. So what are we doing right, and how have we adapted?
Yeah, well, I think one thing that, since we've been required to produce a wildfire mitigation plan since 2019, I think one of the major successes that we've had is our ability to collect data and look at that data and figure out what is that data telling us. We have had fires in the past that have impacted our infrastructure. The Rim Fire was one of the big ones that comes to mind. And I think we've had a couple of other minor fires that we've had. One of the things that I think we've learned from that is what caused it and what can we do. You know, is there something that we could have done about that? And what's come out of that, I think, is our vegetation management program has really increased, and we've got a really good vegetation row manager right now. She's very proactive. She's very knowledgeable with all the regulations. And we've seen a major decrease in our threats to our lines due to trees. We've done a huge project to remove about 300 hazard trees on private property that were next to our 230 KV line up in the upcountry Groveland area. Those were identified through the LiveEO project as well and some previous LiDAR flights. We've also really looked at our equipment and, you know, how is our equipment performing out there? Are we getting, when something does happen, are we collecting that data and trying to figure out what was the root cause of that, and how, you know, how can we fix that? Some of that data is used to help us determine, yeah, we need to start looking at replacing some of these expulsion fuses that CAL FIRE is saying have the potential to, you know, produce sparks if there's a fault. You know, that seems like low-hanging fruit. That's something we can, you know, we could do. We have that information to start working on that.
Thank you. I think you've mostly addressed this, and other commissioners have asked this question. It's really good to see that the amount of information and the amount of data being collected is constantly evolving and improving. It also sounds as though we have a lot of people within the PUC, whether it's vegetation management or people collecting the information that they see, but it also sounds as though we work very closely with CAL FIRE. And maybe are there other entities that we rely on for information or for response?
Yeah, we rely on CAL FIRE a lot. We rely on the U.S. Forest Service, Bureau of Land Management. At least in the Moxon area, we are a part of a coalition called SWIFT. It's a Southwest Interface Team. It's the Forest Service, CAL FIRE, some natural resources agencies, and some county officials. And the main point of that is to work together to do vegetation management projects in what they call the South County of Tuolumne County. It's basically the border of Tuolumne County and Mariposa County, which is kind of an often overlooked area of both those counties. So that's been going on for about 25 years. We've had that, and it was started by the Forest Service, and we've got a coordinator. We meet monthly. We work with CAL FIRE to kind of figure out, hey, where do we need to do some projects? Where can we get some mutual benefit? We work together to apply for grants. And so we try to do as much collaboration as we possibly can.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Mr. Ritchie.
And I'd like to add a couple of things to what Ethan mentioned. One is, and a very important one to us, is the National Weather Service. In terms of what kind of atmospheric conditions we're going to have, what's the humidity, what are wind speeds going to be, because we go into our routine of de-energization basically depending on, you know, what's the fire risk out there and what are the wind speeds. And the wind speeds get above, are forecast to get above a certain level. That's when we plan on shutting down, and we do shut down our transmission lines from time to time as a result of that. Mm-hmm. So that's a very important partnership for us. The other that I would point to on the peninsula and in the East Bay, you know, we have a broader coalition of folks that we have just had our annual meetings with them, and their big lunchtime get-togethers. With CAL FIRE is the lead for fire control within our watersheds. But we host these, and we invite all of the local agencies, the sheriff, the fire departments, the OES from each of the counties involved, and CAL FIRE, and everybody, gets together and meets each other, because, you know, knowing the people in the field is really important. And so that's not project oriented. That's just relationship building that is really critical in fighting all the fire issues we have.
It's all to the good.
All to the good.
Thank you. Commissioner Leveroni.
Is part of the mitigation plan, now that CAL FIRE allows prescriptive burning and participates in that, is prescriptive burning any part of our mitigation plan for our properties?
We currently don't do prescribed burning, to be honest with you, it's not something that I've heard talked much about. We do some brush burning. We'll make brush piles and burn and make sure CAL FIRE, we give them the latitude and longitude to those burn piles and make sure that they know. but at larger landscape level burns is not something we've looked into, at least not up in the upcountry.
Yeah. Ethan works in Hetch Hetchy Water and Power, so he's primarily responsible for upcountry. So we do have, on the peninsula in particular, we have been doing prescribed burns with CAL FIRE on the face of our dams, in particular, our two earthen dams there. We also, over the past couple of years, have been expanding the area where we're doing prescribed burns, again with CAL FIRE in the lead in our peninsula watershed. And that is very important for us because that's where the fire risk relative to the adjacent communities is really high. So we've been looking at, again, tools to reduce the fuel load that as we get into fire season. So that tool has been a bigger one that we've done. And CAL FIRE has been doing environmental documents on that, and we're progressing doing more on that.
Thank you. Let's take public comment if there are no further questions or comments.
Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item 7. Are there any members of the public present who wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, moderator, are there any callers who have their hand raised?
Ms. Lanier, there are no callers in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, could I have a motion and a second to approve this item?
So moved.
Seconded.
President Stacey?
Aye.
Vice President Arce?
Aye.
Commissioner Jamdar?
Aye.
Commissioner Leveroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Thurlow?
Aye.
Item 7 passes.
Thank you, and thank you for the good work.
Item 8? Approve modification number 1 to contract number WD2879R, City Distribution Division Campus at 2000 Marin Street Project with Clark Construction Group.
Getting tech assistance. Thanks. Slides, please. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Shelby Campbell. I'm a senior project manager with the SFPUC. I joined the SFPUC as the PM for 525 Golden Gate. Thereafter, I oversaw the relocation of four city departments to make land available for the biosolids project, as well as the project I'm here to talk to you about today at 2000 Marin, and recently completed the Southeast Community Center at 1550 Evans. To just give you a little background. Let's see if... I don't know why it's not starting at the beginning, though. Okay, here we go. So I'm here today to request the modification to the CMGC contract for our new campus at 2000 Marin. So first of all, who is CDD, the City Distribution Division? We have renamed it to the San Francisco Water Division so that everyone understands who it is. So the San Francisco Water Division oversees the city's potable, recycled groundwater and auxiliary water systems, as well as 1,250 miles of water lines, 12 reservoirs, 9 pump stations, the city's metering program as well as replacement of the water mains. So why new facilities? The existing facilities at 1990 Newcomb were constructed in the 60s. So in addition to the aging of the facilities and exceeding their useful life, they have outgrown the space and are overcrowded. Examples of this are having to do pipe fabrication or repair of large vehicles outdoors, confined equipment in confined spaces without adequate ventilation, overcrowding in offices and shops, as well as unsafe vehicular and pedestrian cross traffic across the sprawling campus at the existing site. So we are moving the San Francisco Water Division to a new campus at 2000 Marin, and we are scheduled to relocate them there in 2028. The new campus will consist of a new office building, two large industrial buildings with multiple shops, a warehouse, and a parking structure. The vehicular traffic will be restricted to the perimeter of the site, and the pedestrian access will be along the spine or the hub in the center of the campus. So we've completed demolition, and we are underway with installation of utilities as well as starting foundations and piles. And we are very much looking forward to erecting steel on schedule in October. We've faced numerous challenges trying to get out of the ground. And I have to say that the collaboration of the design contractor and city team has been really remarkable and has kept us on schedule. The photo above shows the existing building, and I don't know if you can probably see on your screens a small stockpile on the left-hand side of the photo below, and that is the grinding of the building that we demolished, and we intend to reuse the building as a cap for the site during construction. So Clark has held 18 LBE contractor outreach events, as well as 9 LBE matchmaking events. They've executed contracts up to $44 million with LBE contractors and are on their way to meeting or exceeding the LBE goal. We have 40% of the hours worked have been by San Francisco residents, and 89% of the apprentice hours have been by San Francisco residents. So the CMGC trade package procurement process starts with outreach during pre-construction. Then we commence procurement with early packages such as demolition, rough grading, utilities, and foundations while we complete procurement to achieve cost certainty when all of the trade packages have been bought out. And then return to the commission if a modification is required. The trade procurement status of this project is that we do have 30% of the packages remaining to bid and award, and that is due to the recent volatility in the marketplace. So we wanted to evaluate how do we mitigate those risks, and our options are either to procure materials that we won't install until later on and store them, but we don't have storage capacity. We could change the city contract to shift the risk to the city from the contractor, but that doesn't currently exist. Or we can wait in the hopes that the market stabilizes and bid the work closer to when we'll be doing the installations. So we recommend deferring the trade packages, but we'll hold the current budget for the remaining packages in the construction contract. And if the market doesn't stabilize or we're not able to mitigate the risks, we'll pursue cost-cutting measures to stay on budget. So I'm requesting a modification of the original contract of $260 million to $305 million. So the original engineer's estimate was done in June of 2021. We didn't end up executing the contract until the following year in June 22, and we issued NTP for construction last fall 2024. we anticipated that we would need to bring that original contract up to current dollar value, and so we did put in 4 years of escalation when we did our 2023 capital improvement program budget. So we had it in the budget. It was just a matter of going through the procedural process of coming back to you to do the modification. So the escalation of around 3.5% over 4 years is approximately $39 million. And then the other $6 million that we're adding is work that we're conducting on behalf of other projects. We are extending BCTD's duct bank from Marin to Caesar. We are doing a water line from Marin to Caesar. And we are installing a solar photovoltaic system on behalf of SF Power for the site. And so that's what compromises the $6 million of the 45. So that gets us to a revised contract value of $305 million. And then we have a remaining $23 million of the original contingency to work with for a not-to-exceed value of $329 million. And so I'm here to request today to bring the contract up to today's current value. And we have sufficient budget to complete the procurement. And we intend to mitigate the risk by deferring the remaining trade packages. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you for the presentation. Commissioners, comments or questions? Commissioner Leveroni.
You're kind of talking a little faster there than I could think on that on the increase there. So if we can just go back over the increases, because sure. I guess specifically I thought, is it all for this project, or were there a few items that were for expanding the project? So if you can go over that again, please.
Sorry, slides, please. So I actually slipped this slide in today because I thought a breakdown might be helpful. So the 260 is the original. The escalation of 4 years for about 14% is the $39 million is the escalation since the original engineer's estimate. And then the work that we're performing on behalf of other projects is a value of $6 million. And that is three other projects. The BCTD project has requested that we install a duct bank across our site from Marin to Caesar. At Caesar, Chavez, and Evans, there's a bridge. And so you can't go up Evans to reach Caesar with utilities. So this site is conveniently located to get all of our water and power utilities from south of Caesar up to Caesar. So then we're going to cross the site with the BCTD duct bank, cross the site with a water line from Marin to Caesar. And then the SF Power has funding to provide a solar PV system for the site. And that's the significant dollars. The five out of the six is SF Power.
Okay. And then on deferring the trade packages, maybe give me a little more of the thought on why defer. I mean, I know it could be debated, but what is the theory?
Let me give you a couple examples.
Okay.
So the fencing, the perimeter fencing, this is an extremely 9-acre, very large site with a very, very a lot of perimeter. So we could go out and buy that fencing and store it until we're ready to install it. Or, you know, because fencing right now the one that was bought out is manufactured in Canada, and so we may need to look at something else other than what we've designed for. As an example, that work won't be installed until, you know, two and a half years from now. And so, you know, something like that, it's better to kind of wait and see if this kind of crazy time settles down. Another example is the industrial equipment for the shops. A lot of that is from overseas. So again, you know, we just don't have the capacity to procure it quickly and store it. So we kind of need to wait, do a wait and see. Those are the kind of things where they won't be until later on in the project. You know, we'll be erecting the buildings for at least 2 years.
Thank you.
Commissioner Arce.
Thanks, President Stacey. Thanks for the presentation. I had a question, but then also an observation based on Commissioner Leveroni's question on the item where we're talking about work performed for other projects. Tiffany, can we look at that slide one more time, the new slide? One idea, because as I'm glad you asked the question, Commissioner, to be able to kind of go through the nexus of these three elements to this project, I almost feel like it's not necessarily, I'm correct if I'm wrong, but it feels like it's not necessarily work performed for other projects, but these are in some ways almost project enhancements. Couldn't we also look at them as enhancements to this project? If it's solar panels for the facility, if it's power duct bank connected to area adjacent to the facility, if I have it vice versa with water line connected to site to the facility. When I saw other projects in your initial presentation before Commissioner Leveroni, I was wondering if it was something somewhere else. You know, other project is more expansive than this being, it's new work performed for the project, or that's why I wrote down the phrase, is it a project enhancement? It's just a suggestion that without drilling into where the power duct bank, water line, and solar panels were being constructed could give the reader or the listener the impression that the nexus wasn't as direct as it is in my mind to this project itself.
Yeah. I think the reason why I delineated it was to be transparent about what the source of funding is and never say no to someone else's money.
Yeah, no, for sure. So, am I accurate? Just for the record, am I accurate that I would be okay to look at these as enhancements to the project that we're looking at?
We welcome them, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And then the other thing I just wanted to kind of maybe express from conversations and items here since serving on the commission and also our tour that we had the other day, Commissioner Leveroni and I, to get a great tour of the Southeast Wastewater Treatment Plant with AGMs who were joining us here, Robinson, Prather, and the team. And just kind of as we kind of really drill into how we are using these tools for our contracting, that this modification that's in front of us today, this modification was expected in the way that we contracted for the work. So it's not like this is something that we all of a sudden realize or coming back to the commission. This decision facing today, this decision that we're contemplating today, which I support, was contemplated, was part of the way that we're implementing our project delivery. And so I just kind of wanted to share that perspective. And just like I wanted to get confirmation that those other projects element can be considered project enhancements, I just wanted to confirm for myself and for the commission, for the public, this decision point facing us today is something that was contemplated from the beginning of entering in a contract with Clark for this very important project.
Yes, thank you. I really appreciate your perspective. Yes, it was intentional planning.
Thanks.
Thank you. I was also glad to hear you say, Ms. Campbell, that as the project goes on, you'll be looking at other cost-cutting measures that may be implemented in an effort to sort of stay within budget. I assume the PUC does this on all of our contracts, but it's good to keep that in mind as we go forward, that you're always looking at how to stay within budget, and if, you know, electrical and foundation is costing more, that you're looking at are there other ways that we can reduce costs, and that's a really valuable piece of information for the commission and also really important in containing our costs. So thank you for mentioning that. And I also agree that that new slide was really helpful in understanding the increase. Okay, shall we take public comment?
Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item number 8. Are there any members of the public present who wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, moderator, are there any callers who have their hand raised?
Ms. Lanier, there are no callers in the queue.
Thank you.
Commissioners, could I have a motion in a second to approve this item?
I move that we approve this item.
Second.
President Stacey.
Aye.
Vice President Arce.
Aye.
Commissioner Jamdar is excused. Commissioner Leveroni.
Aye.
Commissioner Thurlow.
Aye.
Item 8 passes.
Thank
Item
you.
9. Approve an increase of 365 calendar days to the duration contingency for contract number WW709R, various locations, sewer replacement number 13, with M. Hernandez Construction Incorporated.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. My name is Aileen Kalau. I am a project manager with the SFPUC, overseeing contract WW709R. The agenda item presented in front of you is a request for a construction duration contingency increase to allow additional time needed for the contractor to complete the lateral service replacements originally scoped under this contract. The pipe materials used on this project, which is high density polyethylene pipe, are joined together using an electrofusion process, which is performed inside the open excavation trench. The process of fusing the joints, both connecting the service laterals to the main sewers and the installation of the service lateral fittings, is taking longer than originally estimated by the project team to install. Your approval of the contingency increase allows us to execute a contract modification to needed to complete the project. Happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Commissioners, comments or questions? Seeing none, let's take public comment.
Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item number 9. Are there any members of the public present who wish to provide comment on this item? Seeing none, moderator, are there any callers who have their hand raised?
Ms. Lanier, there are no callers in the queue.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioners, could I have a motion and a second to approve item 9?
I move to approve item 9.
Second.
President Stacey.
Aye.
Vice President Arce.
Aye.
Commissioner Jamdar is excused. Commissioner Leveroni.
Aye.
Commissioner Thurlow.
Aye.
This item passes.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Next item, please.
Item 10, communications.
Commissioners, any discussion on communications? Seeing none, next item, please.
Item 11, items initiated by commissioners.
Commissioners, any items to initiate? No. Okay, thank you. No items to initiate. Next item, please.
Item 12, public comment on the matter to be addressed during closed session. Remote callers, please raise your hand if you wish to provide comment on item 13. Are there any members of the public present who wish to comment on this item? Seeing none, moderator, are there any callers who have their hand raised?
Ms. Lanier, there are no callers in the queue.
Thank you.
Commissioners, could I have a motion and a second on whether to assert the attorney-client privilege?
I move that we assert the attorney-client privilege.
Second.
President Stacey?
Aye.
Vice President Arce?
Aye.
Commissioner Jamdar is excused. Commissioner Leveroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Thurlow?
Aye.
The item passes.
Thank you. The commission is back in open session, and I'd like to report that the commission recommended approval of the settlement to the Board of Supervisors in closed session. Commissioners, could I have a motion on whether to disclose our discussion in closed session?
I move that we do not disclose our discussion during closed session.
Second.
Thank you.
President Stacey?
Aye.
Vice President Arce?
Aye.
Commissioner Jamdar is excused. Commissioner Leveroni?
Aye.
Commissioner Thurlow?
Aye.
The item passes.
Thank you. And this meeting is adjourned.